Welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast with Justin and Trisha Davis.
Honest conversations about life, love, and leadership.
Welcome to season four.
Well, hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Let's Get Real podcast. And we're in for a huge treat today because we're going to be joined in just a few minutes by Bill and Christy Gaultier.
We talk about their new book, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith, Growing Emotionally and Spiritually Through the Enneagram, which y'all know, anytime we get to talk about the Enneagram, we're pretty happy. But they talk about like the hard spaces of life, like how to get unstuck from unhealthy emotional and spiritual patterns, how to get unstuck from anger and shame and anxiety, sadness, and really what it means to walk into freedom, joy, peace, and love, which I know you're thinking, oh my gosh.
Everybody wants to do that.
Yeah. But man, they are a powerful couple who just share just powerful tools, like actual tools to grow.
They lead an organization called Soul Shepherding, and you should check out their website, soulshepherding.org. And I'm just going to be honest with you. They're two of the smartest people I've ever talked to in my life.
Super smart.
But they make complex things about relationships feel so attainable and so simple. And they have pastors' hearts. And so we hope that you enjoy this episode of the Let's Get Real podcast with Bill and Christy Gaultier. Well, hey, welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast with Justin and Trisha Davis. And we are joined today by an amazing couple, authors. They're the smartest people that's ever been on this podcast.
That's right. We are excited about that.
Doctors in the house. So we're excited about that. Bill and Christy Gaultier.
Gaultier.
Oh my gosh, I was wrong.
Well, we were rehearsing it before we started and we're like, okay, is it French? Is it, you know, so we were trying to, I was trying to crush it and I butchered it. So thank you for correcting us. But we're excited to have you guys on the podcast today. Thanks so much for taking the time.
It's fun to be with you. We really appreciate the time with you, Justin and Trisha, and couple to couple here and talk about the Enneagram and our emotions and relationships and faith and good stuff.
Yeah. Well, before we dive in, we were joking before we started this that Justin and I are like, we need to do this in like five parts because you guys are just a treasure of just knowledge and wisdom. And I'm like, I want to sign up to be like under your discipleship. But for people who are not familiar with you, could you just give like a 30,000 foot view of like who you are and what you do?
Well, Soul Shepherding is a nonprofit ministry that helps people go deeper with Jesus in emotional health and loving leadership. We started in 2009 and we train people in our Soul Shepherding Institute. We have retreats. We also offer a certificate training in spiritual direction. And then we have lots of resources like our new book, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith.
And we have been married 37 years. And most of all, we are disciples, students of Jesus ourselves on the journey, following him, continuing to learn and grow ourselves. And then just with the joy of getting to overflow what God teaches us and does in and through us.
That's amazing. How did you guys come to a place? I mean, you both have your doctorate degree. You're both clinical psychologists. How did you decide to start a nonprofit ministry? What was the impetus of the motivation, the calling of that?
Well, first of all, I need to say I'm not a clinical psychologist. I do have my doctorate in clinical psychology, but I'm a marriage and family therapist and a licensed professional therapist. So legally need to make that distinction for sure. But the way that it's also confusing, but the way that we were called out of our private practice ministry into nonprofit ministry full time was as a result of just seeing the work transformation that God was doing in people's lives. And then the Lord really saying, take this out of the office. I want my church to benefit, to be healthy and whole. And so that was really where we were a little bit hesitant to do it. We were used to a fee for service and being able to support ourselves and to think about having to raise money and depend upon support to do this work was something that was a big step of faith for us to say yes to as well. And then to work together full time was another learning and growth for us. It's been really wonderful. We call it pair skating. We had to learn to be able to work together and pair skate to the music of the Holy Spirit. And that's been great. It's been growing for us personally and a great joy for us and such a surprise to see the way that God uses our relationship even more than just us individually.
That is so good. I'm going to use that because Trish and I, you know, we do a lot of ministry together as well. And we are sometimes skateboarding and not necessarily pair skating. So,
this so, is called the Let's Get Real podcast, you guys. Here we go. What I love about your ministry, we have five kids and three are adulting now. Our third born is still in college, but it's been interesting because our older two have really introduced us into spiritual directors and just that discipline of like solitude. And so both of our older boys who are like 28 and
27 and 24,
if I remember their names, I'm winning, but they both have spiritual directors in their lives. And that's part of your ministry. And I think for us, from pastors and now like coaching, it's important to make those differentiations of title, but people are like, what's the difference between a coach and a counselor? You know, so we explain that. How would you explain a pastor and a spiritual director? Because I think people want to know, and you guys champion that so well in your ministry.
Well, pastors are in people's lives, of course. They're preaching sermons, they're leading groups, and they're in their homes, and they're doing life with people through their staff and building up a community and reaching the city and the world for Jesus. And so pastors are wearing lots of different hats. Some pastors are pastoral counselors, which is more specific, and then overlaps with counseling or therapy and coaching and spiritual direction a little bit more. And then they're meeting one-on-one with people in a helpful, caring relationship. Usually it's more short-termed, more connected to the life of the church. Spiritual direction is as old as the hills, but it's new to most evangelical Christians. And spiritual direction is a conversation that someone who is trained has with another person about their experience with God. It's a lot about our relationship with God, our prayer life, which really is everything. And particularly in soul shepherding and the way that we train spiritual directors, because we're coming at that training not only from the historical tradition of the ministry of spiritual direction, but then we're integrating our Jesus-centered psychology with that, because that's our background as doctors of psychology and years of in the pool of pain, helping people as therapists, as well as being in the church world. And so in our spiritual direction training, we're infusing it with the Christ-centered psychology to really help people understand emotions and relationships and conflicts. So the big differentiator is a spiritual director is not treating a mental health disorder like depression or anxiety, that kind of a thing. But they can deal with depressing feelings and relationship conflicts and worries, all in the context of someone's relationship with God. And spiritual directors have normally less training than like a therapist would have. Now, many of our spiritual directors on our staff are also pastors or therapists or coaches and have had quite a bit of training, but they're wearing the hat of spiritual director. And so the conversation is prayerful. It's very oriented around their relationship with God. And then in the way we train them, they're really leaning in to be curious and sensitive around what people are feeling, what they're struggling with, and having a conversation with them about that. And then through that process, finding God in the midst of that. And this is where our new book came in on the Enneagram, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith, is that it's a tool for all of us in our discipleship to Jesus. And it's a very special tool for our spiritual directors or any spiritual director, coach, counselor, small group leader, retreat leader, because it's giving a language for understanding people and their experiences and their struggles and their hopes and their relationship with God even.
That's amazing. Would you say, maybe it's because I have two millennial or, you know, like younger kids, would you say there's a resurgence in the millennial generation for spiritual direction? And is that what you're seeing? Is like a lot of your people that reach out to you about your ministry, are they younger in their faith or, you know, younger in their age?
Well, I would say there is a resurgence, that this is something that more people are recognizing, the need for a safe place, a safe space, their need for someone that they can trust, respect, that they can process their experiences with, that can help them yeah. listen to God's voice in their life, that can pray for them, who can overflow some of their own wisdom and experience. So we're finding a lot of joy to see the younger generation valuing this, and we're open to this. And also, yes, we are getting young people that are coming to be trained in this, that are filling this call as well, but really all the ages we're finding coming in. It's those that are really pressing in closer to Jesus and their devotion to Jesus and to prioritizing their spiritual life and health and their emotional honesty, getting more real, as you guys are saying and modeling and leading in. Yeah.
Well, when we looked at your book, it was really really neat. And what led into, you know, that first question of a spiritual director is there are two people who endorsed your new book that have played that role. My oldest son, Steve Carter, is kind of plays that spiritual directing role in his life. So it was really sweet to come full circle. And your new book, you know, I think titles can sometimes just be titles, but Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith. We've come out of, I think our generation has come out of a season where feelings and faith were not really embraced. In fact, it was more kind of pushed down in your feelings to have a thriving faith, just, you know. Jackie Brewster, who also endorsed your guys' book, she was the one who introduced me personally to the Enneagram, and I just told her I don't like it. And, you know, like everybody who fights things that they don't understand. Sure. And she said to me, the Enneagram is, it's a tool. It's not a weapon and it's not an excuse.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's just so good. And then I finally got to a point that I realized I was a three, and that's, you know, like, here we go. But share a little bit about your passion, you know, from people like me, hear about the Enneagram at first and you're like, it's been around forever, but, you know, I don't know why it's hitting Christian circles. And then you learn about it. Like, how important was it to, for someone who is trained both in the way that you guys are as experts in your lane, why embrace the Enneagram?
Well, we learned about it 20 years ago, and we're both suspicious about it first because it wasn't like a psychologically validated instrument, and we had a lot of those, and it just struck us as kind of quirky. But a couple of our friends were really into it, and we really respected them, and they were talking about it all the time. And so we got curious, and so we took a deeper dive, and we were amazed at the power how God used this tool in explaining to each of us our personalities, stuff in our relationship, and as we walked with it for a while, individually, our marriage, our family, friends, then after a while, we began using it with clients and with students, and we were, again, just really impressed, and it's like we struck the jackpot, actually. They're like, this tool is so helpful as a way to, inside this model, we can put stuff that we know from psychology, stuff that we know from ministry and the Bible and theology, and it fits in there. And that's where soul shepherding lives. We live in the integration of a Jesus-centered psychology and spirituality. And so this is a great tool for that discipleship process.
And I'll say that it was very powerful for me to help me become conscious of sin that I was unconscious of. I was so defended against it, I didn't even see it. And as I learned about my type and I woke up to that, well, I was able to repent of sin I didn't even know I had, because I was getting in touch with it. So it was so helpful and so fostering to greater intimacy with God for me. And then it was such a helpful tool for me to give me an articulation for what I was experiencing from Bill and how to better pray for him and especially empathize with him in our marriage. And then for me, identifying our children, their Enneagram types, being able to understand them better, being able to love and empathize with them better. And then, like Bill said, in our work with clients and then in ministry as well, just saw over and over how helpful it was in obeying the Jesus's greatest commandment of loving him and my neighbor as myself more effectively.
That's so good. I love the word that you use, Bill, of integration, because I feel like the faith system that I grew up in, it was segmentation, right? Like psychology had its place and counseling had its place and church had its place. But what I love about what you guys are saying, and really the heart of your ministry, is there is an integration of faith and feelings are not opposed to one another. And I think for a lot of years, I felt like if I was depressed or if I was sad or if I was angry, I just needed to pray more. I just needed to have greater faith, just needed to trust more. I needed to read the Bible more. And there are times where spiritual disciplines help with our emotions, but there's also a place to recognize our emotions as an aspect of our lives, that it doesn't mean we have weak faith if we're feeling a certain emotion. And so how do you guys live in the tension of both feelings and faith, and how have you integrated those through the work that you do?
Well, we've both found over a number of years that being aware of our emotions and receiving God's grace and empathy there, and finding safe people to process with, obviously as therapists and now as spiritual directors, we give a lot of empathy to people. We've just seen the power of self-awareness. We've seen that, you know, emotions really are the portal into our personality. When you see somebody, you say, you know, how are you feeling? Especially if it's a friend or someone that you're close to. We don't say, you know, well, how are you thinking? We're interested in their heart, their feelings, their motivations, their inner life. We care. And that's how we feel connected. And of course, advertisers know this. They're always appealing to our emotions to get us to buy things. So emotional intelligence is more predictive of success in all things life, not just like business and finance, but relationships, faith, health and well-being. And so the cornerstone of emotional intelligence is being aware of your emotions, receiving empathy, and then getting good at giving empathy to other people. So we major on that in our book, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith. There's been some Christian Enneagram books out for a few years now. We took a different angle by focusing on the core emotions that we all deal with in life, emotions of distress, that is anger, shame, anxiety, and then underlying sadness or hurt, unmet need, loss. And by getting names on those emotions and all the little intricate emotions underneath those headings, and beginning to understand how those emotions are hiding behind each other, because emotions stack and they're right, shaping or malshaping, in many cases, our personalities. And so becoming aware of this and getting a language for how are these emotions affecting me and my personality, in my relationships, in my spiritual life, it unlocks so much of God's grace for us. And then the real key is we go from there then to Jesus, and to see Jesus in the center of our emotions. And so in the incarnation, Jesus takes on human skin, and he becomes each of the Enneagram types. And we can see this in the gospel stories, and we unpack this in the book, different examples, different illustrations, different teachings of Jesus in each of the 9 personality types, and helping you see how Jesus has felt what you felt. He struggled with what you're struggling with. Now, he hasn't sinned, but he's been tempted to sin. So he's experienced all these things as a real human being. He actually took on the limitations of humanity. He's not just like Einstein doing first grade math, and he's just like pretending to learn, pretending to struggle, you know, but it's actually like super easy for him because he's just omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent all the time. No, Jesus set all that aside. He's actually living by faith in human skin for 33 years on earth. And then he shows us the fullness of my Enneagram type. It's so beautiful. I just love to meditate on those scriptures and those ways that Jesus comes to each person in the emotions and the experiences of their type.
This has been so important for me. I'm a wounded healer here, because growing up in the church, I felt a lot of shame for being emotional. And I am a highly sensitive person. And I, even in psychology, getting the training, you know, change your thoughts, change your life, it didn't work for me. And oftentimes I found my feelings had more influence over my thoughts than my thoughts did over my feelings. And I would leave church feeling shame, because I would feel like over and over, often the message was go out and try harder, and, you know, shame on you for having these needs and these emotions that derail you and knock you out of trusting God. And I would just feel like I was blowing it all the time. And it was reinforcing my own sense of shame and self-rejection. and I wasn't able to be agreeing with God's grace. And it was painful to me. And so I felt this huge sense of needing to deny my emotions and even be to the point of being dishonest with myself and others. And it was very much blocking my intimacy with God and my trust for God. And that's why what you guys are doing here with Let's Get Real is so important, because it's only as we're emotionally honest that we can have true empathy. And as Bill was saying, as Hebrews 4:15 says, we have a high priest who's able to empathize with us, because he's been tested and tempted and tried in every way. And he has suffered shame and abuse and anxiety and anger as a human being. And as I woke up to that and began to realize that, no, he wasn't shaming me. He wasn't trying to judge me and constantly lecture me and command me to be different than I felt, but he actually was coming alongside of me and meeting me in my pain, in my emotions, in my needs, in my underlying motivations. And I got this vision of him, Jesus, really caring for my emotions, being present to me in them, empathizing with me, and then this vision of him as the perfection of my Enneagram type and each Enneagram type really led me to growth and integration in this. And then just as experiencing so much healing myself and fueling my intimacy with Jesus, my emotional health so much, being able to overflow that and share that with others is my highest joy.
I think everybody listening is like, okay, I need a moment, because that was really, really good.
Well, you got me so emotional, because I mean, I just highly respect you guys so much and just the journey that you've been on, not just you know, professionally, but academically and spiritually. I have a new book coming out in 3 days, on Tuesday. And it's called Being Real is Greater Than Being Perfect. And the whole premise, is how transparency leads to transformation. And I have a whole chapter on shame, and I don't have my doctorate, but to hear you articulate God's truth about that, I was just like, man, God, you're so kind just to bring this conversation into my heart today. I don't care if anyone else listens to this. I feel like God's given me a gift of just having this conversation with you guys today. Just because I grew up feeling so much shame over abuse that I experienced, shame over sin I committed. And not feeling like, almost feeling like a second class citizen. Like I know God forgives me, but he doesn't really like me. And there's a difference there, and just hearing how you articulated that is just so beautiful, and I'm just so grateful for the work that you guys are doing and the power of your book.
So this is what has been told to us. So like I'm not labeling you this, but Bill, you are a type A. Is that fair? Like more? Are you more analytical processing?
I'm a type A go-getter, thinker, a doer. I played sports growing up, football player. My dad, my grandparents worked in the steel mills. And so I have a side of being tough and strong and Enneagram 1, hero child, parentified child, you know, all that. And then Christy, you're quite a contrast, more type B, relational, gentle, sensitive, highly sensitive person, wonderfully compassionate and tender and relational. And so us learning to blend that has been a journey.
It has. Yes. Working God's grace.
I say that the Enneagram has taught me not to take personal what is personal. Mm. You know, oftentimes in our how we're wired and how we just enter into spaces of just nothing about sin or success or any in between, just like how we're wired, we can take it so personal. But the Enneagram really gives, our counselor said years ago, you can't heal a wound you don't give a name to. And so I feel like what the Enneagram has done, it like gives you names to like why we respond the way we do, and to not take it personal, but how do we meet each other in Christy's ooey gooey, like in, you know, our analytical brains, like how that works. But you guys talk about how we get stuck in the unhealthy side of our personality. And I think of all the questions, people are like, I don't know how to get unstuck. Could you speak into that a little bit?
Well, it's very painful to be stuck in your personality. It's the way that, for the most part, our personality is a false self. It's a way we're trying desperately to secure ourselves, to feel safe, secure, wanted, powerful, loved. It's a defense mechanism, really, against all the ways we've been sinned against and against our own sin. And it's really a way of trying to rule our own life. And so that's why it's so disruptive to our spiritual growth and our intimacy with Christ. And that's why learning the Enneagram is such a helpful and powerful spiritual tool. It helps us to get real. It's like we're all Eustace in Chronicles of the Narnia in that dragon skin. And we need Aslan to come and with his claw, just put a rip in that. But it's painful and it's scary. And it was so painful for Eustace to see himself stuck in that dragon skin. And to wake up to the dragon that he was. And yet it's a grace. It's a severe mercy. And so as we get in touch with this and we learn what the Enneagram reveals to us that's unconscious about these underlying motivations and these underlying needs that we're trying to meet and these defense mechanisms that are such a part of us, we're not even conscious. We're using them and we're relying upon them. But as we wake up to it, and one of the things we have is the emotional alarm for each type. It's an alarm to wake us up to, oh, there I am in my personality, trying to my own God, trying to secure myself, trying to defend myself, trying to protect myself, trying to get what I want. It gives us an opportunity instead to be able to let go of that defense mechanism, to humble ourselves before the Lord and each other, and to really attune to Jesus. And we also have a soul care practice that each type most needs but resists. And it gives us an opportunity of a way we can turn away from depending upon our personality and ourselves and being entrapped in that and open up to the full love and grace and power and truth of God and his life in us. And attune to him, receive from him what we are most needing in our soul to be healthy.
It's so good. I want to dive in a little bit more. Bill, you mentioned this earlier about the core four emotions that you talk about in the book, but would you say that most of the problems that not just people have, but couples have, married couples have, is they're acting out of those four core emotions in an unhealthy way, right? They know how they feel, but they don't necessarily know why they feel that way. And so without finding healing in those areas, we kind of repeat the same patterns in our life, in our relationships, even in our relationship with God. Why was it so important to give those four a name based on the research that you've done and the people that you've worked with?
Yeah, we just saw that those core emotions of distress, anger, shame, and anxiety with the underlying hidden sadness, that those were really defining people without them realizing it, and that they worked somewhat differently in different personality types. And so when you can learn your type, because that's what we're doing in our book, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith, is we're going deeper. There's a lot of people, a lot of Christians that kind of sort of know the Enneagram, or they could say, oh, I think this is my type, and they could say a few things about it. But not many people know what their emotional alarm is. How many people know what their core emotion is, their stress emotion, how that has to do with stuff? They don't know about the underlying sadness. So we just began to see that over our years of working with people, both previously as therapists, now as spiritual directors and coaches, and then with all the students in our Soul Shepherding Institute retreat weeks, as we're training spiritual directors, we just noticed that this was giving a language for what people were dealing with. And we'd intuitively been sort of using this over the years, but it became into sharper focus that these four core emotions with lots of little nuanced emotions underneath it is really where we're living, but so much of it is unconscious. I mean, we might kind of sort of know what we're feeling, but we're not realizing what emotions are hiding under what. And so there's a lot of denial that's going on there. So in the way the Enneagram works, that so whatever your type is, you've got a core emotion. So if you're in the anger triad, that's the 8, 9s, and 1s. Core emotion is anger. If you are in the heart space, yeah, you and I, Justin.
That's me.
I mean, you're probably more comfortable with that than I am as a one, because the one, we don't want to be angry. Eights are kind of like, well, just deal with it. Now, you're a pretty healthy eight, so you got a lot of compassionate two in you, a lot of softness. Or maybe we should ask Tricia about that. But whatever our type is, if you're a head type, you're dealing with anxiety, heart type, shame, we're denying that emotion. I don't want to be disordered with anger. I don't want to think I'm angry. It's like the most unacceptable thing to me. And so the Enneagram is helping us become aware of something. And like you were saying earlier, Tricia, getting names, like you were counseled to have names for what you're feeling, what you're struggling with. That's a key that can open you to the way of freedom.
So good.
And I think making clear that names aren't labels.
Good.
And I think for my own walk, I have labeled myself depressive. You know, I've labeled myself shameful rather than honoring them as, not that you want to honor shame, but acknowledging it as a feeling, but it doesn't define me, but it does guide me that I have a choice of what to do with it. And it's either going to be a healthy choice or a poor choice. And I always, the joke is like, why does the poor choice just come natural? Like, why can't the good choice just become this natural way of living? But I so appreciate that thought process, because I feel like what you guys are championing is a pioneering thought, because you are taking both the physiological side of how God created us, the emotional side, and the psychology even behind how God created, like, in putting it in a way that the average person, when they're feeling these feelings, they are not going to sit down and pick all that apart. There's no way. And so your book makes it palatable to be in the thick of it, but not just the thick of it. What you said, Christy, like, there's healing on the other side.
That's right.
Can you share just a little bit, like, when you think about your marriage story? You know, my parents divorced after 25 years. Justin's divorced after 36. Mm-hmm. So we live in these two realms, that we grew up in a two-parent home, and then we adulted into divorce. And so the people that you guys were when you got married, and the knowledge that you have now, you kind of alluded to this, that you just, you know, intimacy is fully knowing one another and being fully loved. How has this process for you as a married couple just changed your ability to connect?
Well, it's changed it tremendously, because one of the things that has happened, and I'm sure you'll recognize this as being true for you too, but I would see some of these underlying dynamics of Bill that he wasn't aware of, and he would see the ones in me that I wasn't aware of. We could see each other's true self in each other more than we were aware of, and more than we were aware of personally. So when he began to wake up and get the understanding and the language and begin to take initiative to share with me what he was feeling or what he was aware of, it was such a relief to me, because I was like, oh, good. He's seeing it. And God, he's bringing this out into the light, and his relationship with God. And it's not all on me anymore to have to walk on eggshells around it, or to have to try to fix him, or have to try to navigate this. It's like he can now do this work with the Lord, and I can be a part of agreeing with God's grace and mirroring his empathy to Bill. And that was really helpful. And in the same way, as I began to test, can I be vulnerable with Bill with some of my shame? Because I want to hide that. I'm so ashamed of it. I'm so self-rejecting. I'm sure he's going to reject me. But could I start to risk into some of that and share some of my awareness with this? And then as he did that, and I heard from him, yeah, he saw that. This was no surprise to him. He already knew this about me. Here, I thought I had it all neatly, you know, protected and shielded. But and I saw his warmth and his love and his intimacy build with me, and the safety, and the more vulnerable I was with him, the more grace and love I received deeper, and the freer I got from that self-rejection and shame.
That's good. One of the key words that I feel like you guys have repeated quite a bit during our 32 minutes so far is the word empathy. And it feels like there's especially during COVID and over the last couple of years, it feels like there's a vacuum of empathy in the church, amongst Christians, obviously in our society as a whole. Empathy plays a huge part in the life of Jesus. I mean, you know, he doesn't just sympathize with us, he empathizes with us. how have you seen that idea of empathy be so central to your message and to the spiritual direction that you're trying to lead others in?
Yeah, well, without empathy, compassion isn't loving. Everybody knows compassion is a good thing, that Jesus was compassionate. It's all over the scriptures. Empathy, sometimes Christians are not sure about that. Sometimes empathy feels too soft. We misinterpret it as though it's reassurance or coddling or victimizing somebody or navel gazing or selfish. And so there's a lot of empathy gets a bad rap. There's even been some books written against empathy, believe it or not. It's crazy, because if you just think about compassion, what makes compassion so loving and so powerful is when it's empathetic, when it's oriented around a particular person or a group of people in a particular situation, and you're really paying attention with a soft heart. What is it like to be that person? What do they need? And you're praying for them. Because sometimes we can do something that we think is compassionate, but it's more about my need to help or my need to rescue, and not actually what the person needs, because we haven't taken the time to listen to them or pray for them or figure it out. So empathy is very powerful, even though the word is only beginning to be used in some of the modern translations of the Bible. It's all over the place in scripture. And everything in life goes better with empathy. Certainly marriage and parenting and friendship, but business, service, professions, any relationship we're in with anybody who's going to help you, your car mechanic. If the person has empathy for you, it just you trust them more. You feel cared for. You lean in. And when someone is giving us advice, even if it's advice that we need, but they're not empathetic, it's hard to receive, because we all, more than we want to admit, we live in our emotions and we want to be understood. So we've just come to understand this, and we've learned how to integrate empathy for emotions into discipleship, into teaching, into all things relationship. And it just has been super powerful for people to come into our Soul Shepherding Institute, because it's like what you're about here. Let's get real on this podcast. That's wording for empathy. That's wording for emotional honesty. That's wording for connecting at the heart level, the inner person. And so when people can be part of a community that's actually like that, and where the leaders are self-aware enough and humble enough and work through enough, like you are in this podcast, to be vulnerable, it's refreshing for people, because we've all got stuff in our life that we've been struggling with or hiding and we don't understand. And now when you can be emotionally honest with your people, as the Lord has met you, have you gotten help in your marriage or from your counselor or your friend, and now you can overflow with that. So like 2 Corinthians 1, just as the comfort of God flows into our, just as the sufferings of the Lord flow into our life, so also is comfort, so that we can then overflow with that. We can share that with others. And so we become wounded healers. That's the ministry of empathy, really. We especially love to minister to people who we relate to. We've been there. We've been through that.
That's so good.
People in our community have heard me share this story that I went to trauma camp. I went to a place called Onsite in Nashville, Tennessee, or outside of Nashville. And so I call it trauma camp. But it kind of goes built back to how we started this conversation, that emotional intelligence becomes a superpower. It, you know, it becomes an advocate and a guide. But I think the reason I mentioned trauma camp, it was really the first time, it was like an 8-day intensive, that it finally clicked that it's okay to be vulnerable without answers. And it's okay to be vulnerable and not receive all of the answers from a counselor or a spiritual director. But I think for many of us, we get to this place where we know we need help, and we want to be vulnerable, but it's so scary. It's so hard to take that like first step. And so, you know, the listener that's going, gosh, this couple is awesome, because you guys are. And, you know, we will encourage them to get your book. But what I love about you guys is like the book is a stepping stone to even a deeper aspect of growth. What would you say to the person who's like, I want to do an intensive. I want to learn more about myself, but I'm scared to even buy the book because I'm afraid of like having to get vulnerable. What is kind of an encouragement you would say to that listener?
I'll go first. I'll be vulnerable first. And Christy will be vulnerable first with me. And so that's what we do in our intensives in the Soul Shepherding Institute. Now, our intensives are not trauma care in design. We do have people come that have been abused and are hurting, but it's a spiritual formation program. It's a community, 30 to 40 Christian leaders of many different kinds of people that come together. And we're vulnerable first, and we make it safe for people.
It's 5 days, and it's also an opportunity with others who are ready to embark on this journey. And doing it with others helps us take courage. And having a safe space is really important. You don't want to just do this with anybody. There's a lot of places where it wouldn't be safe and where you're going to be re-traumatized. You're going to be re-injured. So there does need to be discernment. There are safe places, safe people to lean into this with. And that's where you do this work. That's where you start this work.
The gift that of spiritual got me direction good. Is that Jesus is the spiritual director. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we're not in the role of the therapist or the trauma counselor, even though we have those credentials and that background. We're in the role of a spiritual director, a coach. And so we can bring Jesus front and center, and we can be vulnerable like a pastor would be or like a friend would be. And we have a whole team of senior spiritual directors that help us in the work, and they operate the same way.
They're available over Zoom. So if any of your listeners are looking for a spiritual director, a safe place to start, even just from the safety of their own home, the confidentiality, that's an option. They could connect with one of our spiritual directors and have a safe place, somebody who knows this language, understands, has been trained in this.
Yeah. So then our book, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith, is one is a tool that our spiritual directors use.
That's amazing. I want to close just by talking a little bit more about the book. As someone is going to pick up the book, we'll put all the links for the spiritual director and for the book in the show notes. But after reading your book, what is your greatest hope that people walk away from? I'm sure it's an understanding of the Enneagram, but I'm guessing it's probably even a little bit more formational than that.
Definitely. My greatest hope and prayer is that they will grow in their enthrallment with Jesus, their love and devotion to Jesus, because one of the goals we had in the book in portraying Jesus as the perfection of each type, that they'll see Jesus in their type and get a vision for what he wants to do in their life. And then also we have his empathy for each type in each chapter, and that they'll really receive and open more to agree with his grace through that. And then that they'll get some handholds, some next steps to help them grow in their emotional health and spiritual health through waking up to their emotional alarm, learning their defense mechanisms, getting a little bit more emotionally honest and real with their emotions, the secondary emotions, taking courage to get in touch with that unmet longing, need, sadness, and doing some good grief work.
Yeah, I was saying in our Soul Shepherding Institute that Christy and I will go first in vulnerability in response to your question, Tricia, but really what Christy said is even more accurate, and that's that, well, Jesus goes first. Jesus is the wounded healer, and he enters into every personality type. So you who are listening, Jesus enters right into your space, what you're feeling right now. If you've been through trauma or abuse, if you're struggling in your marriage, if you're depressed or anxious, your dreams haven't come true, wherever you are, Jesus has been there, and he is there with you right now. And getting a sense of that, a feeling of that, ultimately, most importantly, a trust in that, that's the key to our lives.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for being with us on this episode. It's by far one of my favorite episodes that we've had. I wish we had a lot more time because I have like 10 more questions ruminating in my mind right now. But thank you guys so much. Can you just let everybody know where they can find you guys online and on Instagram?
Yeah, just soulshepherding.org. And for the Enneagram book, Healthy Feelings, Thriving Faith, our Enneagram video course, Enneagram coaching, soulshepherding.org/Enneagram. Yeah, we're on Instagram, Facebook, other social media at Soul Shepherding. We have a very active Instagram account, almost 100,000 followers and lots of comments and community on there. We'd love to connect with you. That's what we love to do. We come to your church and speak. And it's really a joy for us is to get to meet people. And gosh, meeting you, Justin and Tricia. This was awesome. Let's do this again. And we really appreciate the way that you're helping people get real and follow Jesus with that. And so thankful for your vulnerability. It's been refreshing for us to be in this conversation.
Guys, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Let's Get Real podcast. If you're interested in Bill and Christy's book, we're going to leave all the information in the show notes. Make sure you check that out. And we'll see you next time on the Let's Get Real podcast.